This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
When was the last time I took a road trip? How many national parks could I hit in 2 weeks? What about hotels? Wait, hey, Erica, how much am I spending on travel?
When your questions about life turn into questions about money, there's Erica, the virtual financial assistant to help you spend, save, and plan smarter. Only from Bank of America. What would you like the power to do? Erica is only available in the English language. You must download the latest version of the mobile banking app, only available on select mobile devices. Your chat may be recorded and monitored for quality assurance. Message and data rates and additional terms may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey everyone, it's Hamish from the Young Investors Podcast. Myself and Brandon are excited to bring you your weekly rundown of the latest business and investing news from around the world. Now, a quick reminder before we get into the podcast is that nothing in this podcast should be taken on as personal financial advice. If you're ever unsure about your finances or investing, make sure you reach out to a qualified financial advisor. But with that said, let's get into another episode of the Young Investors Podcast.
All right, guys, welcome back to yet another episode. Hamish Hodder is joining me as always from sunny Melbourne, I'm guessing. It's a cloudy Melbourne.
Yeah, it's okay. It's a bit cloudy today, but no, we've had really good weather. But I haven't been outside because I've been sick, so that's unfortunate. Yeah, I've got my my quarterly sickness is upon me. It seems
weekly so. Sickness. Yeah, more like.
Weekly
quarterly.
Sickness.
That's yeah, generous.
So hopefully my voice isn't too bad in this episode, but we'll see how we.
You
go.
Sound all right.
Okay, that's good. All right. Well, it sounds terrible for me, but sometimes it doesn't come through on the microphone. So yeah, hopefully it's okay.
Mm.
Yeah. How have you been?
Yeah, I've been good. About to go to Japan, go skiing for a week, and then I've got a Bucks to go to in Bali. So that's going to be
quite the
holiday season. So yeah. it, the unfortunate thing is it has meant that the last week or so has just been one of the busiest weeks of work I've had in a long time, but
yeah.
We're getting through it, and it continues right now with the podcast. I don't actually see the podcast as work. I quite enjoy doing the podcast.
Yeah.
And in this episode, guys, what we are going to be going through, we're going to go through the 13F filings. So we're going to look at what the world's best super investors have been buying and selling for Q4 of 2023, because we did just get that information. But we're also going to do a bit more of an explainer around the 13F filings, what they are, what are the limitations, where you can find them, so that you guys can track this stuff as well from the comfort of your own home, Hamish. that's pretty much what we're going to do. We got these 13F filings released, I think, in the middle of last week as we're recording this, so it's still relatively fresh news. We got a lot to talk about. So with that said, shall we get going?
Let's do it. Today's episode is brought to you by Seeking Alpha, your one-stop shop for stock analysis, market data, and news. Access expert analysis and news for thousands of stocks. View buy, hold, and sell ratings from members, Wall Street analysts, and Seeking Alpha's own algorithm. Screen for stocks using a variety of fundamental and technical analysis metrics. Access 10 years of financial data and company filings. And manage your portfolio by tracking your investments with price alerts so you never miss a buying opportunity again. Click the link in the episode description or head directly to seekingalpha.me/younginvestors to try Seeking Alpha free for 7 days. So go check it out if you haven't already. Do you want to start by just taking us through, give us a brief kind of overview of what it exactly is? What exactly is a 13F filing? Because some people might not have come across them before and understand what it is and why it's interesting for us to look at them.
Yeah, so a 13F filing, I've got the full definition here. A 13F filing is a quarterly report filed with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, so the SEC. So it is an SEC filing. It's a form that these investors have to give to the SEC. And yes, it is written by institutional investment managers with at least $100 million in assets under management. And what it does is it discloses their equity holdings and can provide insights into what the smart money is buying, selling, or holding. Thanks to Google for that that marvelous definition. But what it means is it means that we can look from 13F filing to 13F filing to see what the world's best investors have been buying and selling during each quarter. Now, technically, we don't actually have to log on to the SEC database because these days there are a lot of websites which just do this for us. We'll talk about that in a little second. So really, it's as easy as logging onto one of these websites and just having a look because they all automatically update to show you what they've been buying, holding, and selling. So it's very, very simple to have a look at what the world's biggest and best investors and institutional money managers buying and selling from quarter to quarter. But the catch is, there's always a catch, right? The catch is that these 13F filings are due 45 days after the end of each quarter. So unfortunately, this does limit how much information we can actually take away from the 13F filing. Because it's not like, you know, Warren Buffett stands up and buys a new stock and we immediately get that information. In fact, for the 13F filings that we just got released the other day, he could have made this investment on the 1st of October last year. That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
And we only would have just learnt about it right now. Yep. So there is a bit of an issue around how much information we can take just because there's such a delay until we get the info.
Yeah, and even on that note, there might be something in the 13F filing that they no longer hold. Because they might have sold it after the end of the period during the 45 days that we have to wait for it for the filing to come out. They could have sold the position. So while we do get a snapshot in time, it's a snapshot 45 days ago or now about, 52 days ago. So you kind of have to just keep that in mind when we're looking at it.
Yeah, exactly right. For example, Michael Burry is a great example. The investor from The Big Short, he acts... he's a value-minded investor, but he acts more like a trader. Mm. So there's not that much that we can take from his filings because in a lot of cases, by the time he has actually reported the information, he's already bounced out of a lot of these positions that he's held in his portfolio. So the flip side to that is that an investor like Warren Buffett is very much long-term focused. He loves looking long-term. So there's a very strong chance that when we get... a new buy from Warren Buffett, that stock will stay in his portfolio for an extended period of time. So there is more of a stronger signal from a portfolio or a 13F from, say, a Warren Buffett to like a Michael Burry.
Yeah.
For someone, yeah, that's...
Yeah, sorry. I was going to say is for someone like Warren Buffett, the 45-day delay is kind of irrelevant. Like if you're interested in understanding what he's holding, sometimes we might miss things, but more or less, it's going to give us he's probably still holding the stock that he bought, at least 45 days ago.
Definitely. So that's one of the limitations with the 13F filings. And Hamish, I wanted to throw it over to you. What websites do you tend to look at when you go to analyze the 13F filings?
Yeah, I think there's two main ones that I think most people use when they're looking at 13F filings. Maybe there's other ones. If anyone else knows other ones that they use more than these, feel free to let us know in the comment section of the YouTube video. But the main one that both of us, I think, use is Dataroma, which is basically a pretty simple website that collects, about 80 super investors, big institutional investors, and tracks all of their US stock holdings. And that list pretty much includes anyone you probably are interested in looking at. It's got most of the big ones. Anyone who you certainly might admire or have read a book from, they're probably on that list. If their fund or company has more than $100 million in assets under management. The other one that's also useful to use alongside Dataroma is Whale Wisdom. And the reason why Whale Wisdom is quite good is because it also shows the options contracts that are held, which Dataroma, for some reason, they don't kind of collect that data. So particularly for someone like Michael Burry, who loves to, buy put options and call options, you'll only see those. You won't see them on Dataroma. You'll only see them on Whale Wisdom. So, those are the two main sites that I think most people use these days.
This episode is brought to you by Accenture. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I tend to agree. There are many out there, but they're the only two. Oh, and the only other thing we should say as well is that because 13F filings are limited to the United States, it's the Security and Exchange Commission filing, it doesn't show us international holdings. Whereas there is a company that have a website, which is ticker.com, which do try their best to add in international filings as well as the 13F filings,
yes,
so that you can, in some cases, get that more complete portfolio. Okay, the next thing I wanted to talk about, we've spoken about what they are, where to find them, what are the limitations, because there are definitely limitations. We've already kind of spoken about the big one. So the big one, of course, don't need to spend any time with it, is that it's delayed. It's a 45-day delay, so we can't actually be sure whether they still hold the stocks once we've gotten the information. So that's a big limitation. There are more limitations, though. Another one, another really big one, is getting caught, and this is very psychological, getting caught blindly copying a super investor and then not knowing what to do. That's the real danger with the 13F filing. Because it can be tempting, right? You get to see what Warren Buffett is buying and selling. And this can, if you're not super confident or experienced in the market, this can make you want to blindly copy a Warren Buffett. Oh, Warren Buffett just bought Chevron. I'm going to buy Chevron. Yeah. Whereas that's not really the best strategy because, of course, sometimes, you know, just say Chevron went down 30% and you're caught holding the stock. That's going to make you feel very uncomfortable and not. It'll make you feel like you don't know what to do, and that's not a good spot to be in.
Yep.
Do you buy more? Do you sell out? Has something fundamentally changed in the business? You won't know, and also you won't get to see what Warren Buffett thinks until another 3 months down the track,
yep,
where things could have changed completely. Yep. So that's a very big limitation of the 13F filing.
Yeah, there's also a bunch of things that are just not included. Cash, for example, you don't really get an idea of how much cash that they have. And another big, fairly important one is short positions. So we get really no insight on them betting against a particular company. So we don't really get, you know, some investors will only have long portfolios, only investing in companies, but a lot of investors will have a mix. So you don't really get a full grasp. That on top of the international holdings, of course, not being there, you don't really get a full grasp of the portfolio. Oh, and also other asset classes as well. You know, this is just a look at equities. So, you know, there's obviously commodities and real estate and other asset classes that could also make up their entire investment portfolio.
Yep, that's true. You don't get international stocks, commodities, you know, don't understand their cash position. So it is, you know, you don't understand if they're maybe hedging. There's a lot of things where it is an incomplete picture.
Yeah.
You can still take away a lot of information from a 13F filing as long as you understand going in that you are looking at an incomplete picture. Because it's still interesting. Like you can see, you know, if Warren Buffett drops $10 billion into Coca-Cola, like, you know, he's making an investment in Coca-Cola. Like there's no way around that. So there is some information you can take away. I use it personally as an ideas list. I don't use it, as I said before, as something where, oh, Buffett's buying, I better buy as well. It's an ideas list for then you to go on and do further research on. But yeah, I think we've covered all the main ones. Just to know that there are limitations to the 13F filings.
Mm.
And with that said, we will now, for the second half of the podcast, let's move on and talk about all of the investors that we follow and what they just reported in their Q4 2023 13F filings. And should we start with the granddaddy himself?
Let's start at number one. Start with Mr. Warren Buffett in Berkshire Hathaway.
So we'll start with Berkshire Hathaway. This one's going to be over pretty quickly, though, unfortunately, because I love making a video about what Warren Buffett does from quarter to quarter, but this time he just didn't do very much.
Yeah.
In fact, out of the top 20 stocks in his portfolio, so the really core stocks in his portfolio that we know are definitely Buffett pulling the moves, he only did three things. And then the three things aren't really groundbreaking, so I'll run you through them. He reduced a whopping 1% in his Apple position.
Whoa.
Shock horror. and then from there, the only other notable thing is that he continues to add to the oil stocks. So he added 14% to Chevron and 8.74% to Occidental Petroleum. So any insights, any potential insights around this? To me, I don't know.
Yeah,
I think this is a bit of a nothing quarter from Warren Buffett, but...
Yeah, I mean, the
what's your take?
The Apple move is obviously absolutely nothing. You can't really read anything into that. He's done very minor trims here and there over the last couple of years, quarter to quarter. And oil stocks, I know nothing about oil, so
yeah. I've
clearly Buffett likes them, but I don't have any grand insights there.
Yep. Neither do I. So, unfortunately, they're really the three things that he did, the 1% trim in Apple. It's funny that the 1% trim in Apple is still, like, relatively major compared to all the other stuff, just because Apple is 50% of his US portfolio.
Yeah.
So, I find that pretty funny. But apart from that, like, some of the other stuff that was in the Berkshire Hathaway 13F was a 32% reduction in Paramount Global. That was 77% reduction in HP. There was a 315% addition to Sirius XM. Hmm. Although these are all so far down the list, it's actually you wouldn't even be able to bet the house that it was Warren Buffett.
No.
Probably Paramount and probably HP, but the Sirius XM, not sure. And just one other thing, when I scroll to the page, there were 4 complete sales. So Berkshire Hathaway completely sold out of D.R. Horton, Markel Group, StoneCo, and Globe Life. But they were all such tiny, tiny, tiny parts of the Berkshire portfolio. I would hazard a guess that was all Ted and Todd.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, even the Paramount, I would say, is probably Ted and Todd. I think everything public that Buffett has said about the streaming or media space has been negative. So I don't even know if Buffett knows that they own
now Paramount. The shares.
I think all of those smaller positions are at Ted and Todd at this point. Yeah.
So that's Warren Buffett.
Yeah.
Who should we talk about next?
I can run through a few. I mean, there was quite a few people doing, investors doing absolutely nothing. So we can kind of run through maybe some of these fairly quickly, or doing nothing or making very minor changes. Guy Spear, someone that we like to follow, did absolutely nothing. Lee Lu also did absolutely nothing. And I think they've done that for maybe more than a year. I'm not exactly sure, but there's been lots of inactivity in
roughly
both of those portfolios. Bill Ackman made a couple of kind of minor changes, although he didn't really make any major changes to the portfolio. He reduced his Chipotle investment by 13%, reduced Hilton International by 11%, and reduced Lowe's by 82%. So that's actually quite a significant reduction. But in terms of his big holdings, major changes. Should I talk through Prabhai?
Prabhai.
I think the most important thing to remember when looking at Prabhai is that most of his holdings are outside of the US. and we know this from some filings, but also just from the what he said specifically. So not obviously through the 13F filing, but yeah, most of his holdings are outside the US. But within the US, last quarter he held 3 coal mining and coal supplier companies. This quarter,
interesting,
he still holds those 3 coal companies, Arch Resources. He actually tripled the size of the position to become 16% of his kind of US portfolio, $39 million. Alpha Metallurgical Resources, he reduced by 10%. That one is 54% of the US portfolio, $133 million. So that's actually, you know, a big part of his US portfolio. And then Consol Energy, again, another coal company, reduced by 7% to be 15% of the portfolio, $37 million. He did add, so he has his 3 coal stocks and he added a new stock. Super exciting.
I'm pumped.
I wonder what it is. Yep, it's a coal mining company. So he now has 4 coal mining companies or coal related companies in his portfolio. This one is Warrior Met Coal, which is 15% of the portfolio now. So super exciting from Prabhai. I think he might be interested in coal. I think maybe he sees something in the coal space.
Do you know anything about coal? Like I don't really. I wonder what his thesis is around this.
I don't know. I mean, Prabhai likes often very cheap companies that, you know, maybe don't have a super long-term future, but on a cash flow basis or on an asset sale basis, there's something there, there's some value there. So potentially, you know, with this huge shift away from particularly coal, but towards renewable energy, potentially in the space, there's assets that are, you know, undervalued there. As those industries, that industry is kind of expected to decline, I guess. That would be my guess as a very uninformed person on the topic. That's pretty much all I kind of know in regards to that.
I tend to agree.
Yeah.
No, I tend to agree.
So those are his, sorry.
What else have we got?
Yeah, sorry. Just to finish off Prabhai. So those are his US positions. Outside of the US, this isn't news, but his biggest positions are outside the US. So he has a position in a financial services company called A Delvice, which is $68 million. SunTech Realty, $52 million. Rain Industry, $17 million, and then his biggest position is Rasis, which is a Turkish logistics company, $153 million. So you know, a couple of those companies are way bigger than any of those US positions we spoke about. So that's something to keep in mind when looking at his 13F filing and his US positions.
Yeah, it puts things in perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I will now go on. Let's talk about Michael Burry.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Burry up next, the value-minded day trader that he is. There's not that much you can take away from Michael Burry's 13F filings. Although he did do 3 things of note. Firstly, he bought, guess how many, Hamish? 18 new stocks this quarter. 18 newies. In they come.
Recycle portfolio.
Yeah, and they're all like, they're all roughly equally, so they're all like 3-5% positions in his portfolio now. But 2 of the stocks that he bought in that bundle are Amazon and Google. And I found this interesting because I don't know about you, but I don't think Michael Burry is one to subscribe to speculative stock rallies. And we've all seen, in fact, we know that he doesn't because, you know, as soon as like Tesla goes through a speculative rally, he bets completely the other way and shorts it. So he's definitely not one to go with speculative rallies. And I find this interesting because, of course, Amazon and Google, part of the Magnificent Seven, have absolutely skyrocketed into insane territory over the last 12 months or so. So I feel like he must see something in Amazon and Google. Personally, I look at them both and I feel like they're both pretty pricey, but he clearly sees something. Not exactly sure what or whether this is just a purely short-term trade on price movement, but I just can't see him doing that, especially when he just doesn't buy into overhyped stocks.
Yeah, it's funny to see because, yeah, it was only a couple quarters ago that he had, he was betting against the Nasdaq. And the S&P. So You know, it seemed like he was pretty much making a bet that the NASDAQ was overvalued because of the kind of Magnificent Seven hype. And now he owns a couple of them. So yeah, you can never quite understand what is going on inside Michael Burry's head. So yeah, I guess we'll see next quarter if they're still in the portfolio. They probably won't be. They're probably gone. He'll probably be back
they're
to
probably
short.
Not there anymore.
He'll be shorting the NASDAQ again next quarter.
Yeah, that's fine. Actually, on that topic, he actually sold out of a put option position against the SOXX, which is the iShares Semiconductor ETF, of which NVIDIA is 10% holding.
Right.
So he was betting against that, but he has decided to close that one out. And then the other thing that he did, and these are the two largest holdings in his US portfolio, Alibaba and JD.com, two Chinese e-commerce sites, he added about 50% to both of those positions. So they have, I know he chops and changes a lot, but they have been two of the more consistent holdings throughout the last, say, year or so. So interesting if he's making some sort of longer-term play. I hesitate to say it, but based on maybe seeing... maybe he just sees a lot of value in these stocks because they've both lost 75%, Hamish, over the last couple of years, both of them. They've both lost three quarters.
Crazy.
And obviously a lot of that's got to do with the Chinese macroeconomic kind of position. People just aren't spending money. There's deflation. The Chinese, you know, the CCP isn't doing a lot of stimulus. So maybe he's waiting for a turnaround in the macroeconomic environment, but... yeah, I found that interesting. And that is, yeah, like I say, two of the more consistent stocks over the last little while. Any ideas on that one, Hamish?
Nothing new. I was just going to reiterate, he's held those positions at various times over the last couple of years. So it seems like he likes the business. It's just, he's doing his short-term trading to figure out where he wants to own them as a part of his... broader strategy, which is something that Burry actually does kind of broadly anyway. He kind of seems to have this like list of companies that he ducks in and out of. So even though he does change the portfolio a lot, there's a lot of names that come up fairly frequently that seem like he thinks they're good businesses maybe or something, and he just kind of trades in and out of them.
Yeah. Yep, I think that is the play. All right, Hamish, what else we got?
The last one I've got here is Seth Klarman, the Oracle of Boston. as he's called, he basically, again, he pretty much did nothing. There was a lot of minor moves. He has a much deeper portfolio. He likes to hold a lot of companies. He did some trimming and some topping up, as he kind of usually does if you've watched his kind of 13F before. The biggest change was that he no longer holds a company called Veritiv Corp, which was previously 10% of the portfolio. So I think it was the second largest position in his portfolio. He no longer holds it. It completely sold out. So what happened? Well, the company's a business-to-business provider of packaging, publishing, and hygiene products. So they sell kind of like those disposable food containers for companies that you might see like a salad at your grocery store in, or like disposable coffee cups to cafes and that sort of thing. Seems like a pretty boring kind of straight down the line value business. Why did he sell? Well, he didn't. So even the most active part of his 13F was also not him. So the company was just acquired by another business.
Oh.
So it was acquired by a company, a private equity company called Clayton Dubler and Rice in November of 2023. So it was acquired, and of course it's a private equity company, so the stock went private. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Right.
Like, he did absolutely nothing, and the biggest change in his portfolio wasn't even him.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. The only other changes was he reduced his Alphabet position by 23%, so a fairly considerable drop. But it is still 9% of his portfolio, $415 million, which puts, Klarman's on a different scale to some of the other guys on this list. Obviously not on Buffett scale, but he manages a lot of money.
Yeah, it's interesting as well. Like that's another thing you should consider is the scale. Like we talk about all these people because they're all great minds and we all kind of treat their minds equally, but the scale that they're on with each of their portfolios is a lot different. So yeah, Buffett's in the billions or in some cases tens of billions of dollars per investment. You know, Klarman here is $415 million, whereas a Michael Burry, like his two investments in the Chinese e-commerce, one was like $4 million and one was $5 million, full stop.
Yeah.
And we look at what was Monish Prabhai's.
He's in, yeah, like $50 million, $100
million. 60, yeah. 60, $50 million. So they're all on different scales. They're all smart people. They're all smart people, but they're all on different scales.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Anything else for Seth Klarman?
That's it for Klarman. Yeah, I think it was a fairly, unfortunately, it was a fairly uneventful 13F, which kind of happens from time to time. Nothing that's sticking out at us,
yep.
But there's always next quarter.
we'll see something. The one thing that I noted from this quarter is that on balance, there was much more selling than there was buying. So when I look to, even like looking through the most bought stocks, right, which is a video I'm making at the moment, and you look at some of the Magnificent Seven names like the Amazons and the Googles and the Metas and all that, they still make the list for the most bought stocks because, you know, 7, 8, 9 of the super investors bought them in the quarter. However, when you actually click on that company and look at the full report, you actually see they're also the most sold stocks in the quarter.
Interesting.
So maybe 8 investors buy them here, but 20 over here have sold. So,
right.
Yeah, net, there was a lot of selling this quarter, which makes sense. I mean, these are long-term focused investors, right? Value-minded, you know, investors. And all we've seen over the last 12 months is a lot of stocks going to euphoric territory. So I think it makes sense that on balance, they're probably going to be selling more than buying. So,
yeah, 100%.
Yeah. All right, that will do us, guys. That is the 13F filings for Q4 of 2023. What the super investors were buying heading into the year. Thanks very much for joining me, as always, Hamish.
No worries.
That was good.
Yeah.
Good, snappy episode. And with that said, guys, thank you guys very much for the time that you give us listening to these podcasts. I hope you're enjoying them. I hope you're enjoying the new structure. With that said, we'll leave it here and we'll see you guys in the next one.
See you guys.